This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Monday, December 19th, 2016. Coming up this hour.
European banks are in focus with Deutsche Bank slashing executive bonuses to offset mounting legal costs.
Monte De Paschi begins fundraising efforts to avoid a rescue by the Italian government.
Barclays plans to sever ties with up to 7,000 clients as part of a plan to boost returns.
The Electoral College is gathering today to formally elect Donald Trump as the nation's 45th U.S. president. I'm Michael Barr. More on this and other stories straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Giants won for the 10th time. They beat Detroit last night. Dallas beat Tampa Bay. Rangers over the Devils. The Islanders lost. So did the Nets and St. John.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1200 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on Bloomberg.com and via the Radio Plus mobile app.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by CGMA, the Chartered Global Management Accountant designation, bringing strategic insight to your finance team and providing the skills you need to turn risk into opportunity. Learn more at cgma.org/radio.
And it's 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And futures this morning are higher. S&P E-mini futures up about 3 points. Dow E-mini futures up 33. NASDAQ E-mini futures up 5. The DAX in Germany is little change. The CAC in Paris down 0.2%. FTSE 100 down less than 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was also down less than 0.1%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32. The yield 2.58%. The yield on the two-year, 1.24%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.6% or 29 cents to $52.19 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.25%, up $2.90 to $11.40.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.0447. The yen, 117.51.
Equities in Asia kick off a new week of trading. Bloomberg's Juliet Sully has details from our Hong Kong bureau.
Bob and Karen, Asian stocks started the new trading week on a mixed footing. A higher oil price boosted energy players. However, geopolitical tensions weighed on some gains. The Shanghai Composite closed lower by 0.2%, Beijing pledging to contain financial risks and deflate asset bubbles. Meanwhile, Hong Kong stocks slumped. In fact, the city's benchmark Hang Seng Index at one point fell into the red for the year. The Hang Seng Index's losses since its September high are now approaching 10%. In Japan, stocks fell for the first time in 3 days as the yen traded around 117 to the dollar ahead of the Bank of Japan's last policy decision of the year. Australia and New Zealand, though, bucked the regional trend, shares closing 0.5% higher in Sydney. The Aussie dollar also marginally stronger in Asian trade after the government forecast a smaller budget shortfall. Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak, Hong Kong.
Thanks, Juliet. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs says China's capital outflows are accelerating and the central bank is selling larger amounts of foreign exchange. The firm's warning comes as the yuan heads for its biggest annual decline in more than 20 years. Goldman economists say nearly $70 billion exited China in November, and that compares to a pace of about $50 billion since June.
Let's get the latest out of Europe now. For that, we bring in Bloomberg's Matt Miller live from our Berlin bureau. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Bob. Yeah, European stocks are down almost across the board with the FTSE and the CAC dropping. The DAX showing just a slight green arrow being held up by RWE, Infineon, and Beiersdorf. On the DAX, one of the big losers today is Deutsche Bank after that company was downgraded by Citigroup among the European banks. Citi says Credit Suisse is its top pick. Deutsche Bank, Citi says, has risen too far too fast, about 41%. Since the U.S. elections. Credit Suisse, on the other hand, is up only 27% since U.S. elections. In other movers across Europe, we have yogurt maker Danone falling this morning about 3% after saying that its 2016 sales growth will miss its earlier targets. That's as fewer Spaniards buy its yogurts. That market has been contracting for 3 years, and the company is overhauling its Activia brand across Europe. Bob and Karen.
Matt Miller, thank you. Meanwhile, the Sunday Times reports that Deutsche Bank will slash executive bonuses. The cuts are designed to help offset mounting legal costs, including a U.S. Department of Justice request for $14 billion to settle a probe in Deutsche Bank's mortgage bank securities business. Instead of bonuses, some senior managers will receive retention checks that pay out over several years. Junior staff will still get bonuses, but much smaller than previous years.
In Italy today, Monte dei Paschi begins taking orders for shares as it aims to raise $5.2 billion by the end of the year to avoid a government rescue. Bloomberg's Kevin Costello has the story from Rome.
Monte dei Paschi will sell stock to institutional investors through Thursday, while the offer for retail investors will end on Wednesday. Separately, the newspaper Il Sole reports the Italian government is preparing a plan to provide support of up to 15 billion euros for the country's troubled banks. Kevin Costello, Bloomberg Daybreak, Rome.
Thanks, Kevin. Barclays could sever ties with up to 7,000 clients as part of a plan to boost returns. The British bank is preparing to tell those customers to do more trading with the firm or find another bank. As part of the move, Barclays has launched a new computer system that ranks its trading unit clients by the returns they generate for the firm. Since 2014, Barclays has parted ways with 17,000 customers as tougher capital rules make dealing with smaller firms less profitable.
In deal news this morning, Fairfax Financial Holdings has agreed to buy insurer Allied World Assurance for $4.9 billion. Fairfax will pay $54 per share, an 18% premium to Allied's Friday closing price. The purchase of Switzerland-based Allied by Toronto-based Fairfax is the latest in a trend that's seen smaller insurers seek larger partners to gain scale.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Volkswagen is nearing a deal with the Department of Justice that will add $1 billion of cost to settle its 3.0-liter diesel emissions case. Volkswagen has thus far agreed to buy back 20,000 first-generation 3.0-liter vehicles and fix 60,000 second-generation models. VW and the DOJ both say they are pleased with the progress made in negotiations thus far. And futures this morning moving higher. S&P E-mini futures up about 3 points. Dow E-mini futures up 32. NASDAQ E-mini futures are up 5. And IMEX crude oil is moving higher as well. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Karen, that brings us to 5:07 on Wall Street this hour of Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Mazda White Plains. Visit MazdaWhitePlains.com. It all becomes official today. Let's bring in Michael Barr with the very latest now. Good morning to you and welcome back, Michael.
Thank you very much, Bob. Members of the Electoral College are set to formally cast votes today for Donald Trump as the 45th president. Electors have been inundated with emails, phone calls, and letters urging them to vote against Trump. Meanwhile, aides to Donald Trump say he's not ready to accept a finding by intelligence officials that Russia hacked Democratic emails in an effort to boost Trump. The aides say that even if it's true, Trump still won the White House fair and square. Trump's incoming chief of staff, Reince Priebus, spoke on Fox News Sunday.
There's no evidence that shows that the outcome of the election was changed because of a couple dozen John Podesta emails that were out there.
The chair of the Democratic National Committee, Donna Brazile, says Congress needs to investigate.
The emails were weaponized. The release of stolen hacked emails caused a lot of confusion. And, of course, it disrupted our daily campaign lives.
Brazile spoke on ABC's This Week. China is pushing back on U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's accusation that it stole a U.S. naval drone last week out of the South China Sea. A Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman says China seized the drone to protect shipping safety in the region. Trump said over the weekend that China had stolen the drone in an unprecedented act. China has agreed to return the drone to the U.S. Voters in the Ivory Coast will find out today who won yesterday's parliamentary elections. Bloomberg's Andre Yanza Van Furen has more from Ghana.
While the ruling RHDP coalition of President Alassane Ouattara is expected to maintain its dominance, the opposition FPI will make its comeback to the National Assembly after boycotting polls in 2011. Their return will see the start of the normalization of politics following an armed standoff because of a disputed presidential vote in 2010. Andre Janssen van Vieren, Bloomberg Daybreak, Accra.
Today we'll get the verdict in the negligence trial against IMF chief Christine Lagarde. Bloomberg's Caroline Conant is in Paris.
The French prosecutor has called for the negligence charges against Christine Lagarde to be dismissed because they are quite weak. He said Lagarde has been accused of things that do not relate to criminal law but to politics. Now, the 15 judges are not obliged to follow the prosecutor's recommendations, so they are free to rule in the opposite direction. Caroline Conant, Bloomberg Daybreak, Paris.
Global News 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Much obliged, sir. Now, 5:09 on Wall Street, coming up on 5:10. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, and good morning to you, John Stashower.
Good morning, Bob. A familiar script for the Giants' terrific defense. The punter, Brad Wing, did a great job, and just enough offense thanks to number 13.
Manning calls out signals, takes the snap, looks, throws one right, throws. Dell makes the catch, one-handed, heading for the end zone for a touchdown. A little speed out to Odell Beckham Jr., and he reeled it in with one hand.
Not the first time we've seen that. WFAN, the call. Giants picked up their 10th win of the season. That touchdown by Beckham sealed the 17-6 win over the Lions. There's two games left. They ended Detroit's five-game win streak. Eli Manning also threw a TD pass early on, and the defense did the rest. Wings punts several times, landing deep in Detroit territory. Giants didn't quite clinch a playoff berth, but they're close to doing that, although their path in the postseason will almost certainly be on the road as a wild card. Dallas last night bounced back from their loss to the Giants, beating Tampa Bay 26-20. Their rookie QB, Dak Prescott, 32 of 36, ending talk of the Cowboys going back to Tony Romo. Dallas leads the Giants by two games with two to go. Shortly after another loss, Jacksonville fired coach Gus Bradley. At the Garden, Rangers didn't score until the third period. Derek Stepan's goal with a minute 13 left got them to a shootout, where Kevin Hayes won it 3-2 over the Devils, who've now lost six in a row. The Islander losing streak reached five, beaten at home by Ottawa 6-2. The Nets fell at Philadelphia 108-107. College basketball annual holiday festival at the Garden. Penn State beat St. John's 92-76. Rutgers improved to 11-1, 68-53 over Fordham. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Bob.
John, thanks. Tennis star Andy Murray has been named BBC's Sports Personality of the Year, becoming the first person ever to win the honor three times. This is Bloomberg. Daybreak, brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. Call JCS Donor Advice Fund now to lock in the current generous charitable tax deduction for 2016. Visit jcfny.org.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and this update is brought to you by J.P. Morgan Funds, building stronger portfolios by sharing expertise, insights, and a breadth of solutions across all asset classes. JPMorganFunds.com. Let's solve it. J.P. Morgan Distribution Services. The dollar is retreating versus most major peers as heightened geopolitical tensions over China's seizure of a U.S. naval drone adds to reasons for traders to pull back amid the greenback's strongest rally since 2008. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures are up 3 points, Dow E-mini futures up 34, NASDAQ E-mini futures are up 6, and the DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. The 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.58%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.23%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 22 cents to $52.12 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2% or $2.40 to $1139.90 an ounce. The euro, $1.0443. The yen, 117.52. Benny Steinmetz, the Israeli billionaire who's been entangled in a long-running dispute with authorities over rights to one of the world's most valuable mining assets, was detained in Tel Aviv on suspicion of bribing government officials in Guinea, that according to people familiar with the situation and that crossing the Bloomberg moments ago. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. The Electoral College casts its ballots today for the next president of the U.S. Anti-Trump forces are trying a long-shot effort to deny Donald Trump the White House. Protests are planned for state capitals, but they are unlikely to persuade the Electoral College to change their vote. A smog red alert in China has forced cities to limit the number of cars on roads and temporarily shut down factories to cut down pollution. State media is reporting that more than 700 companies have stopped production in Beijing and that traffic police are restricting drivers by monitoring their license plate numbers. In sports in the NFL, the Giants down the Lions, the Patriots, Ravens, and the Raiders were all winners. The 49ers lost. In the NBA, the Nets lost to the 76ers. The Wizards and Celtics were winners. In the NHL, the Rangers beat the Devils. The Islanders lost. The Bruins won. Global News 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Bob, Karen?
Michael, thanks very much. The Bank of Japan is forecast to keep policy unchanged at its final scheduled meeting for 2016, the last big G7 decision of the year. Ahead of this, the dollar retreats. Let's talk to Alexander Dryden, global market strategist at J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Good morning and welcome. Besides the BOJ decision coming up, we also saw some tension between China and particularly the incoming U.S. president, a back and forth of words over the weekend. It seems to be concerning the markets. What kind of concern do you have about geopolitical matters heading into the new year?
At this point in time, I'm not focused on the U.S. and China. I'm more focused on the very busy European calendar. But what I would say about this U.S. and China flare-up is that this is sort of two politicians trying to gauge where they stand and trying to set out what their priorities are going forward. Now, instead, I'm focused more on the European calendar, where we've got a very busy set of elections going into next year. We've got 41% of countries in terms of GDP holding elections in the next 8 months in Europe. So that's where I think the geopolitical pressure will be.
That's where some of the question marks still lie.
Yes, and there's still a lot of uncertainty about where, which populist parties will be coming into power, what their policies are, and what their view is towards the future of the single currency. So there's a lot of pressure, and I think that's where the focus will be when it comes to politics going into next year rather than over in the U.S.
Do you see a lot of instability coming up in the early part of this coming year?
Instability, I think, from a political sense, we've had this political storm that started in the UK with the Brexit and the UK referendum vote. It then moved across the Atlantic to hit the US in the US political storm, and now it looks to be coming back towards European shores. With that being said, though, markets seem to be being able to process a lot of this political risk and take it in its stride. You saw after the Italian referendum, the markets barely flinched as Mario Renzi stepped down as the Italian Prime Minister. So you can see maybe markets and investors are getting used to some of this political turmoil.
Is there a breaking point at some point that you see?
I think there's a point where there will be some stresses and strains, and the single currency is going for a challenging point of view from a politics standpoint. And a lot of investors and voters across the single market are looking at the single currency and asking the question, does this work for me? And that's what we're starting to look at and debate more hotly going into 2017.
Oil speculators seem to be getting a little bit more bold as the possibility that OPEC is going to pull off this agreement seems to be brighter.
Sure, yes. We're sitting on one of the more bullish views for oil going into 2017. We have a $60 target by the end of the first quarter of next year and a $70 target for the end of 2017. Now, that's broadly based on the idea that we believe from a supply perspective that OPEC will be broadly in compliance. We don't think every member is going to pull their weight, but we think some of the heavier weights like Saudi Arabia will honor the agreement to cut production. And also from a demand point of view, we're also looking at a stronger global economic environment, which should be productive for demand. We've got global PMIs ticking up to a 2.5-year high in November, consistent with about a 3% global growth rate going into 2017. So that's something that we think is positive going into next year.
Would you go as far as saying that 2017 is shaping up to be a good year for oil?
I think 2017 so far should be a good year for oil. The risk, of course, is that the OPEC deal falls through and that they can't honor the production cuts that they've agreed in the last month. So this is something that I think there's the risk. But broadly, if they can remain even just a little bit compliant, the supply and demand dynamics suggest we could have quite a good run in 2017 from an oil point of view.
And we see this divergence happening among central banks. How much is that going to affect the markets?
Well, I think what we've been seeing over the last few years is growing global economic divergence, and in 2017 that's going to look a lot more like monetary policy divergence. We're looking at the US economy thinking that the Fed is going to get on and raise rates somewhere between 2 and 3 times next year, with a risk to the upside rather than the downside. Now, what that is going to look like is a stronger US dollar going into next year. I know it's weakened a little bit in the last couple of days, where I think that's a case that we've had a good run since Trump, but the growing interest rate differential between the U.S. and the rest of the world is something that will keep pushing the dollar higher.
Alexander Dryden, global market strategist at J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Appreciate your insights. Thanks very much. S&P E-mini futures up 3 points. That is a tenth of 1%. Dow E-minis higher by 33 points. NASDAQ E-mini futures up by 6 points. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Decorate your driveway with something extraordinary this holiday. Head to the Mercedes-Benz winter event at your local Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealer for limited-time offers on the vehicle of your dreams. Hurry, offers end soon.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date in the news you need to know at this hour. Barclays is preparing to tell 7,000 clients to do more trading with the firm or find another bank. Using a new computer system, the bank is ranking every customer of its trading unit by the return they generate. Barclays says it wants at least 10% return on capital from every customer. Those that can't meet the threshold will be asked to leave in what the bank is calling a managed transition.
In deal news this morning, Toronto-based Fairfax Financial Holdings has agreed to buy Swiss insurer Allied World Assurance for $4.9 billion. Fairfax will pay $54 per share. That's an 18% premium to Allied's Friday closing price.
Here in the U.S., homebuilder Lennar is scheduled to report quarterly results this morning. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has a preview.
Bloomberg Intelligence says Lennar's guidance suggests home sales revenue may have risen about 12% in the fiscal fourth quarter. Closings could be up 9% year over year, with average selling prices up about 3%. Higher land and labor costs likely reduced Lennar's gross margins. Analysts predict the home builder will post a profit of $1.28 a share on revenue of $3.3 billion. Lennar gets 8 buy ratings, 9 hold ratings, and no sell ratings. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Jeff. Airbus has suffered a blow to its already troubled A380 program. Iran Air, which had previously suggested it would buy the double-decker plane, says the model will not be part of its wider fleet upgrade. The airline has reduced its order to 100 planes, which does not include the A380, saying it won't spend more than $10 billion. The original agreement was expected to bring in $27 billion for Airbus.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Volkswagen is nearing a deal with the Department of Justice that will add $1 billion of cost to settle its 3.0-liter diesel emissions case. Volkswagen has thus far agreed to buy back 20,000 first-generation 3.0-liter vehicles and fix 60,000 second-generation models.
In Tokyo today, shares of Nintendo tumbled 7%. The slide comes after the debut of its mobile game Super Mario Run was met by lukewarm reviews. Nintendo has seen its stock slide more than 11% since the game's debut last week.
Futures this morning moving higher. S&P E-mini futures up 3 points. Dow E-mini futures up 34. NASDAQ E-mini futures are up 6. And NYMEX crude oil up 0.3%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
And Karen, that brings us to 5:33 on Wall Street. This hour of Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Palisades Audi. Visit PalisadesAudi.com. Going to be an electrical day for the Electoral College. Michael Barr.
Bob, thank you very much. The Electoral College meets today to put its final stamp on the 2016 presidential election. Bloomberg's Amy Morris has more from the 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
It is a long-shot effort to block President-elect Donald Trump from taking office. The so-called Hamilton electors say if only 37 GOP electors change their vote from Trump, he won't be president. The Associated Press, though, interviewed more than half of those electors and found most Republicans plan to stick with tradition. While some do want a briefing on allegations of Russian hacking, it would take an act of Congress to delay the Electoral College vote. Amy Morris, Bloomberg Radio.
Donald Trump's aides say the president-elect is not ready to accept the finding by intelligence officials that Moscow hacked Democratic emails in a bid to elevate Trump. Even if it's true, they say, Trump still won the White House fair and square. Incoming White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus spoke on Fox News Sunday.
The real question is why the Democrats and why these electors and why MoveOn.org and all of these organizations are doing everything they can to delegitimize the outcome of the election.
Meanwhile, the chair of the Democratic National Committee, Donna Brazile, told ABC's This Week that Congress needs to investigate the matter.
We were fighting a foreign adversary in the cyberspace, the Democratic National Committee. We were no match, and yet we fought constantly. That's why I think it's important that Congress takes a very open approach to looking at what happened.
Republican Senator John McCain repeated his call for a select committee to investigate the Russian hacking claims. Gunmen assaulted Jordanian police in a series of attacks today. At least 10 people were killed, including 7 officers, 2 local civilians, and a Canadian tourist. Test results show that there is no chemical contamination in the water supply of Corpus Christi, Texas. Mayor Dan McQueen says residents can resume using the city's water supply for drinking, bathing, and cooking. The water ban was issued last week out of concern that a chemical leak at an asphalt plant could have contaminated the city's tap water. Global News 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Bob?
Good to have you back, Michael. It's now 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Good morning to you, John Stashower.
Good morning, Bob. The Detroit Lions had won 5 in a row. In all 9 of their wins this season, they had come from behind in the fourth quarter, and they were in position to perhaps do it again. But an Odell Beckham one-handed touchdown grab on a third down play put the Giants up by 2 scores with 6 minutes left, and a Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie interception in the end zone with just over 2 minutes to go sealed the Giants' 10th win of the season, 8th in the last 9, 17-6 at MetLife. Beckham credits the defense.
I still feel like, you know, we leave too much chicken on the bone as an offense, but, hey, we're finding ways to win games. Defense is holding the team to 6 points. It's tough to beat a team, you know, when the opponent's only scoring 6 points. So keep finding ways to get stops, and I think just offense, we're coming along. I think we're right there. The breakout game is coming soon.
The next game is soon, Thursday in Philadelphia. One more win clinches a playoff berth. One more Dallas win clinches the division. Cowboys last night beat Tampa Bay 26-20. Dallas is 0-2 against the Giants this season, 12-0 versus everyone else. Jacksonville figured why wait. Jaguars fired coach Gus Bradley after their 9th loss in a row. Devils and Islanders both riding losing streaks, 6 straight for New Jersey, though they got a point. They lost to the Rangers at the Garden, 3-2 in a shootout. Rangers had tied it on a late goal by Derek Stepan. Isles' 5th loss in a row was at home to Ottawa, 6-2. Bad loss for the Nets, 108-107 in Philadelphia. Brooklyn still with only 1 road win all year. College hoops, annual holiday festival at the Garden. Penn State beat St. John's, 92-76. Rutgers now 11-1, 68-53 over Fordham. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Bob?
Thanks, John. Now 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for your T2 Computing Tri-State Business Report and our Monday check-in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Bob. New Jersey could become the first state to end a requirement that local governments publish legal notices in newspapers. Instead, it would allow them to post the notices online. State lawmakers are ready to vote on the measure that opponents say Governor Christie's using to target newspapers after their coverage of him. Christie says the rule is a burden to taxpayers. Well, Citigroup's global head of retail banking and mortgages, Jonathan Larson, has resigned for personal reasons. Larson's been an advocate of digital banking, especially in Asia. The New York-based bank has yet to choose a replacement for what it terms his critical role. United Technologies has been upgraded to outperform at Credit Suisse. Previously, the Farmington, Connecticut-based aerospace and building supply company was rated neutral. Credit Suisse also raiding the target price from $108 to $125 within a year. And that's your T2 Computing Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Bob?
Thanks, Ed. The government's latest reading on third quarter economic growth highlights this week's economic calendar. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice tells us more.
In its prior estimate, the government reported gross domestic product expanded at a 3.2% annual rate, the strongest showing in 2 years. Progress in the labor market and steady household spending have kept the economy on track. Business investment, though, remains lackluster. GDP represents the value of all goods and services produced in the U.S. Also on this week's economic calendar, data on home sales, durable goods orders, and personal income and spending. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Benny. Let's check the markets now. S&P E-mini futures are currently up 3 points. That is a tenth of 1%. Dow E-minis higher by 34 points. NASDAQ E-mini futures up by 6 points. In Europe, London's FTSE is down 0.2%. The CAC in Paris down 0.25%. The DAX in Frankfurt is unchanged at this hour. And let's now go to an announcement by BP executive Bill Dudley. He signed an investment agreement with Abu Dhabi. As part of the deal, BP is awarded 10% interest in the ADCO oil concession, and Abu Dhabi gains BP shares amounting to about 2% of the company. Bloomberg's Tracy Alloway in Abu Dhabi.
Should we take this deal as a sign that now is the right time for oil majors to begin ramping up investment?
Well, I think one has to have some confidence in the price. We've really retooled BP, getting ourselves down to an efficient level. We've been saying we will balance our sources and uses of funds in 2017 at a $55 oil price. A year ago, we were saying 60. Now we can do it at 55. It's clearly in sights. I think we're going to remain very, very disciplined about the capital we spend, the projects we select. But it's time for BP to start growing now. We've worked through so many difficulties in the U.S. that I think the company is now well positioned for growth towards the end of the decade.
BP CEO Bob Dudley speaking to Bloomberg's Tracy Alloway in Abu Dhabi. Right now, West Texas Intermediate crude is up 0.3% to $52.05 a barrel. And your Tri-State Business Report was brought to you by T2 Computing, a new kind of IT solutions company for workflow, mobility, and infrastructure. Let them explain how their expertise can help you gain greater business value. Visit T2Computing.com.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The dollar is retreating versus the yen as traders take stock following a six-week rally in the currency. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg, with the yen at 117.48, the euro at $1.0442. Futures are higher. S&P E-mini futures up 3 points. Dow E-mini futures up 34. NASDAQ E-mini futures up 7.5. The DAX in Germany little changed. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.58%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 18 cents to $52.08 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% or $1.90 to $11.39.30 an ounce. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, electors are set to meet in all 50 states today to formally elect Donald Trump as U.S. president. Anti-Trump forces will try one last-ditch long-shot effort to deny him the White House, with protests at state capitals. Human Rights Watch says about 600 people died in Indian police custody from 2009 to 2015, many after being tortured. Actress Zsa Zsa Gabor has died. Gabor, who appeared in movies and on Broadway, died after a heart attack at her home in Los Angeles at age 99. In sports in the NFL, the Giants downed the Lions, the Patriots, Ravens, and the Raiders were all winners. The 49ers lost. In the NBA, the Nets lost to the 76ers. The Wizards and Celtics were winners. In the NHL, the Rangers beat the Devils. The Islanders lost. The Bruins won. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Bob?
Thank you, Michael. And the ETF report is brought to you by Oppenheimer Funds. What makes revenue so smart? Find out at oppenheimerfunds.com/ETFs. Here's Catherine Cowdery.
ETFs have taken in more than $270 billion so far this year, easily breaking the $243 billion haul of 2014. Until November, U.S. bond ETFs led all asset classes in flows this year. That changed after Donald Trump won the presidential election and U.S. equity ETFs became more popular. Bloomberg Intelligence analyst Eric Balchunas says aggregate bond ETFs took in about $28 billion, the most of any fixed income category.
That tells you that traders and the hot money was pretty much on the sidelines this year when it came to fixed income.
Balchunas identified an ETF with large inflows this year, the iShares TIPS Bond ETF, ticker TIP or TIP.
This ETF TIP took in $6 billion. That's more flows than it's taken in the past 6 years combined. So for the first time, investors are looking at inflation as a possible concern.
Balchunas adds that as interest rates increase, flows in the fixed income area could shift. An example, Balchunas says a fixed income ETF that hedges against rising rates has tripled in size since the start of December. That's your Bloomberg ETF report. I'm Catherine Cowdery.
Catherine, thank you. Now time to check in with Bloomberg Gadfly. Gadfly is Bloomberg's global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis about pivotal financial markets and corporate news. We're joined live now by Edward Evans, Bloomberg Gadfly editor in our London bureau. Good morning. Capital expenditures, CapEx. You've got the president-elect here promising to bring back jobs. Does that mean companies are finally going to put the mountains of money they have to work now?
It's unlikely, and there's a big reason why. It's called overcapacity, surplus capacity that's already existing. We've seen oil and the prices of other commodities rise, and that's prompted investors to ask whether 2017 will finally see companies increase capital expending after what's been a very long fallow period. Now, a rebound would be a big support for productivity and growth, and in the US would help Trump keep his promise to, as you say, bring back jobs. But the problem here is surplus production capacity, and it's across a range of industries, from steel to shipping, and that means a big splurge in CapEx is unlikely. When there's a lot of slack in the system, businesses simply don't need to invest so much. Look at steel, where you've still got the problem of Chinese overcapacity. Look at commodities, look at the miners, people like Glencore and Anglo American. They're focused on cutting debt and boosting cash flow. If they are going to start opening their wallets, they're going to more likely to use up spare capacity before they develop any new resources. Same goes for oil, and also look at shipping, where the prospects are even bleaker. Orders for new container ships have all but dried up. Finally, consider one thing, how able and willing companies will be to finance new investment. Obviously, over recent years of low interest rates, they've loaded up on debt, they've funded share buybacks and M&A rather than investment. Interest rates are starting to head up, and of course that means the hurdle companies have to jump to make a return on their investments will be higher, and then add the Trump factor, the political uncertainty, and many companies are going to decide to wait and see. So don't expect a rebound in CapEx next year.
And Gadfly has taken note of a 20% surge in copper prices over the past 2 months, but found little evidence of rising demand.
Yeah, there's a lot of theories about this, a lot of theories about demand for the metal. Congress has decided to stimulate rather than starve the economy. Chinese exports getting a fillip from a declining yuan. But there's precious little evidence here that consumption is actually picking up. And what is actually going on is a supply crunch in the market. The key thing to look for here is the political events that are going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, it's a top five copper producer. President Joseph Kabila is refusing to step down after a 15-year term. Big risk for the copper market here is that tensions return the copper country's metal output to the levels of the early 2000s. That was one of the deadliest conflicts since World War II left production at less than 10% of its current level. Now, Congo isn't the only source of political risk. Look to Indonesia as well. The effect of this is going to be a squeeze in the short term, at least in 2017.
Edward Evans in London, thanks very much. And you can read more fast commentary and instant analysis at Bloomberg.com/Gadfly or by typing GADFGO on the Bloomberg.
Now it's time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And today, Bloomberg Law hosts Jim Grasso and Greg Storr speak with James Tierney, former Maine Attorney General and lecturer at Harvard Law School, and Paul Nolet, a professor at Marquette University Law School, about how Democrats plan to battle the Trump administration in court.
Paul, as you look over the legal landscape, and of course we don't know exactly what the Trump administration is going to do, but where do you think Democratic attorneys general are likely to have the biggest impact? Is it filling in the regulatory gaps? Is it challenging, say, environmental regulations? Where do you see them making a mark?
Well, I think just in terms of pure quantity of litigation, I think the
one of the big focal points will be definitely an environmental policy. And so at the beginning of the Trump administration, I think it will be some continuing skirmishes over some of Obama's regulatory efforts, like the Clean Power Plan, the Waters of the U.S. rule, and other things like that. But I think throughout the Trump administration, I would expect to see quite a lot of wrangling over deregulatory efforts coming out of the EPA and potentially a variety of other new environmental issues coming out over the next few years as well. I think part of it will be going after the feds directly, so suing the EPA, trying to delay or stop deregulatory efforts. But some of it will also potentially be going after, say, utilities or industry in general, kind of similar to what some AGs have done investigating Exxon over the past year and their connection to climate research and potentially sweeping some of that research under the rug. So I see those areas being particularly prominent areas for AGs in the coming years.
Jim, any other hot button areas where Democratic AGs have the best chance of winning?
You know, my friend Paul makes some good points, but he, I'm sure, would say that a lot of that sort of speculation at this point, we really don't know. I think AGs are going to be very focused on criminal justice reform, and we don't know what the Trump administration's position will be. All AGs are against hate crime, and we'll roll up their sleeves on that. I think dealing with an increasingly diverse population that we have in this country, if you're an AG, is pretty important. I mean, what kids are in school, what about witnesses in court, what about victims of crime? A lot of these things don't pay attention to some of these legal status in the country. So I see a lot of the diversity-related issues. I thought former CIA Director Robert Gates made a good point when he said, you know, people say one thing in campaigns, they act a lot differently once they're in office. And I think that all AGs and Democratic AGs in particular are certainly willing to give the Trump administration the chance to see what they're really going to do. He does come in personally with a bad rep from his Trump University days. Every attorney general looked at that case and was pretty disturbed by the behavior of Trump University. That was not a partisan issue. So he's on everybody's watch list, and maybe the attorneys general are looking particularly closely, but we'll have to wait and see what happens.
And that's James Tierney, former Maine Attorney General and lecturer at Harvard Law School, and Paul Nolet, a professor at Marquette University Law School. Speaking with Bloomberg Law host Jim Grosso and Greg Stoore, you can listen to Bloomberg Law weekdays at 1 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio.
And that's this morning's Bloomberg Law Brief. You can find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com for more information.
And higher, S&P E-mini futures up 4 points, Dow E-mini futures up 37, and NASDAQ E-mini futures are up 9. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.
This is the Bloomberg BNA Report. Legal, tax, regulatory, and business information. Here's Patrice Sikora.
The IRS will have to refund taxes withheld on payments made to some injured vets. The Combat Injured Veterans Tax Fairness Act is designed to ensure that veterans who suffered service-ending combat injuries are not taxed on their severance packages. Taxpayers making a compromise offer to the IRS should not have to pay the agency a fee that is larger than the maximum amount they are able to pay. That is the suggestion of opponents to a proposal to increase the fee 61% to $300. The agency has said the hike is necessary because of its budget woes. And the Federal Railroad Administration wants more tracks on the Northeast Corridor to allow for faster and more frequent service between Philadelphia, New York, and Boston. In its latest recommendations, the agency says there should be 4 tracks in most locations along the corridor.
That's today's Bloomberg BNA Report. For more on these and other stories, visit BNA.com.